In a world completely overrun by inane media, there are podcasts that rise above the rest. This is not one of those. Two middle-aged white guys from Middle America talk about random shit for about an hour or so. This is the Magical Talking Hatch.
Now.
See?
That's good.
Now everybody knows I said it. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat podcast. The only podcast, only one anywhere, officially recognized by the CDC as more annoying than SARS.
More annoying than SARS?
Yes.
When did that happen?
You clearly haven't been looking at Facebook.
Oh, sorry.
Don't you like the CDC on Facebook?
No.
Aren't you friends with the
CDC? No, oh, my I'm goodness. Not friends you with really the CDC on Facebook.
Used to be about the love. Anyway, welcome to the Magical Talking App podcast. I am Tony.
And I'm William.
And this is episode...
36?
This is like your only job.
I don't.
I think it... Well, oh God,
I've been preoccupied lately.
I can't even...
With a lot of things.
We have to... Oh, God. Okay. Hold on. I gotta look. I think you're right. I think it's 36. Yes, 36.
Okay, see? I was right.
And later we'll be 37, because we have to do that, because... I'm not allowed to hang out with William on Thanksgiving. On Thanksgiving, I kind of go on a meat-eating rampage of sorts. Not like through the town, but just people set
through
like,
the town.
Like meat in front of me, and I eat it with no utensils, and I just kind of crawl across the table and plow through it. And as a vegetarian, this William finds this distasteful, so he'd rather not... See me on Thanksgiving, and I can respect that. So we won't be recording one on Thanksgiving, but we will be playing one on Thanksgiving that we record later tonight. So you'll still get your fix. It just won't be live or whatever.
I wonder if people will listen to it, or they'll be napping after eating all that food and watching all that football. But what time are you going to put it up?
Probably earlier.
Yeah.
I mean, I usually do when we do that. That's the bonus you get of not getting a recent one is you get it sooner. but from what I hear, a lot of people use the podcast to help them nap anyway.
Okay.
So
sure, right. So it should be up before you eat and available afterwards for a little after dinner.
Exactly. Settle your stomach.
Well,
bicarbonate of hat. I feel like we should say, just in case we occasionally get new listeners, I don't know that we do, but we should say that this is a podcast with me and William about a magical hat we found that has its own email, and so you can write to the hat, and then we draw your questions and your topics randomly out of the hat and discuss them until we get bored.
Yes, the talking part is us.
Yes, the hat does, oh my God, that came up. The other, oh God, I don't even remember what the context was, but two of the people in my game listen.
Oh.
And one of them wasn't there, but one of them was. And we got something with it. Oh, I think one of the people who doesn't listen was talking about the hat talking or whatever. And me and Cheryl at the same time were like, hat don't talk. Hat does not talk.
It makes us talk. It compels
exactly.
us.
It is a magical hat of talking.
The power of the hat compels us to talk.
It says, I need an old podcast host and a young podcast host. So here we are. Okay, so now you know and half the battle, all that stuff. So, William, since you're so preoccupied, how was your week?
I didn't consume any interesting media, so you go.
Then what are you preoccupied with?
With everything else. With life. You know, I have a life.
That's interesting, but you're not going to tell our listeners?
That's exactly right.
Oh, you suck.
No, actually, my life isn't interesting to anyone else, but it is preoccupying to me, and so...
Well, I would be more annoyed if I didn't have so much to talk about. Oh, my God.
Yeah, you usually do. I don't even know why you waste time asking me.
We have big, big news.
About the Nerdist people come. What?
I'm saving it.
But I already gave it away. Okay.
People don't listen when you talk. So it's
why do you even tell me these things? If you don't want me to ruin it, don't tell me.
This is it. We're going to get to that.
Okay.
I'm going to start with the most boring thing and move forward.
Oh! Boring to you, anyway.
No, boring to them.
Okay, okay.
I consumed some interesting media this week.
Very good.
Last night, for date night, we went out to dinner. We went to Hearth. Have you been to Hearth?
No.
Do you know where it is?
No.
Okay. You know where 126 is down in the middle of downtown?
No. I don't get out very much.
Right in the middle of downtown is a place called 126. It's the actual address of the place. And they actually have three restaurants together now. They have 126, which is kind of an upscale, fancy restaurant. Upstairs from there, they have a place called Moonrakers that is apparently a gastropub that I have heard very good things about. And then upstairs, right next door, is a place called Hearth, which is a weird sort of mix of weird. Apparently, the people who run it have varying backgrounds of Croatian and Indian and things, so they make all sorts of weird different things. And it's a lot of small plates and stuff like that.
Hmm.
So Trish and I got a few things and tried it, and it's pretty nice. If you live in the Iowa City area, I would say, yeah, go check out Hearth. Go check out any of them.
What's a gastropub?
A gastropub is pretty much a term for a more cheap, casual restaurant that has good food. It's sort of become a thing now.
Why they call it a gastropub?
Gastronomical.
Yeah, but I mean, what, the pub part, there's a bar there too?
Well, yeah, generally they tend to have good, you know, beers and stuff too.
I see. But,
it's supposed to imply, I won't even want to say fancier, more carefully prepared cuisine in a casual setting.
I see.
That's what it's supposed to mean.
It actually sounds kind of gross, gastropub.
Gastropub? Gastrointerpublicist. Gastrointerpublicist.
I'm not even going to say what it sounds like.
I want to know what that job is. I just invented it, but I want to know, what's a gastrointerpublicist? That might have to be the title of this episode.
Pub is short for public house, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Gastronomical public house. That's what gastropub means.
See, that's even worse.
Gastronomical is not a bad thing. Gastronomy is fine.
I know, but it just sounds bad.
You're like the producer back in the day used to have an issue with the phrase ginormous because it sounded...
Is that even really a word?
Well, not a real, real word, but...
Okay.
It's like redonkulous and crap like that. I see. But it's become busy enough that I'm pretty sure it'll end up in the OED like in 3 years.
Okay.
Because they put any shit in. My bad is in the OED. So.
But your date night, anyway, went and consumed media.
We consumed some food at Hearth.
And then some media.
But then we came back here and we watched, because the producer has never seen this film and I felt it was important that she see it. We saw The Crow.
Yeah, I saw it only recently myself.
Forever? You had not seen it before?
Never seen it before, no.
Okay, what did you think?
I didn't like it.
You did not like it?
No.
At all?
No. I thought... Now, I could understand, though, when it was made, why it was very popular. Because I think it was very different for the time it was
released. Well, yeah, it has a lot of stuff in it that is incredibly cliche now was not incredibly cliche at the time.
That's right.
Most of the stuff you see nowadays is copying from that.
Well, that's what I gathered when I watched it. Yes. I thought, oh, I see now where all that comes from. Unfortunately, I'd seen all the rest of the stuff, and so it's like, okay,
And don't get me wrong, there are some cliches in it that were around long before.
But I gave it a break because of all that. But at the end, you know, I still didn't feel like I really could say I liked it.
It's, I mean, I don't love it. I don't need to own it or anything like that. And in fact, here's the funny thing. My opinion of it has changed a great deal over the years. I originally saw it in the theater in 1994 and was not particularly fond of it.
Hmm.
Over the years, my position has changed. Again, as with a lot of things, if you take it on a much less literal level, I appreciate it more as a symbolic thing. And it's, again, it's... it's a concept. It is the quintessential goth film, you know, before there was such a thing as emo. and as that sort of archetype, I appreciate it. And I don't know, it was better than I remember. I've seen it many times over the years. And in fact, I went in college with who I still think is probably the biggest Crow fan I've ever known. We went opening night we drove a long ways away to get to where we could see it, to see the second one,
mm-hmm.
which was awful.
Oh.
Incredibly awful. And I have not seen the third or fourth one, but to put it in perspective, those never made it into theaters.
Mm.
So I do not anticipate them to be good. The second one was really not. And it's not something that should have sequels, really. It doesn't work.
Well, I think if I'd seen it when it originally came out, I think I would have appreciated it for what it was. I still don't think I would have, you know, loved it like a lot of people did.
Yeah, it's... Well, and... Honestly, it's one of those... It's like Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus. It's one of those that... Knowing what happened behind the scenes, because Brandon Lee died in the filming of it shortly before he was supposed to be married, much like the main character, all that kind of... He, apparently, Trish looked up later, he died during the scene where they kill him in the movie. Like, lends it a whole sort of other feel.
I seem to recall hearing about it that they were shooting blanks, of course, but
yes.
Somehow a cartridge came out, hit him in the temple or something.
What I remember of it is they were shooting blanks, and then other times, in scenes where there is no person in front of the guns, you use real ammo. And somebody mixed up which gun was loaded with
really?
Which. That's what I heard at the time, but I was young back then, so I don't know.
I didn't know.
I also had completely confused what scene it was in, so I don't know.
I didn't know they ever used live ammo on set.
I think so.
I don't know why they would, actually.
I don't know, maybe it's cheaper, or maybe if you want a particular effect of property destruction, I don't know. Or maybe I'm wrong. That
I'm sure a listener knows.
Almost never, but...
I'm sure a listener knows what it is and will tell us.
But anyway, Mark, they also did a TV show for a year.
Who did?
They made a Crow TV show.
Really?
The Crow Stairway to Heaven. And that is actually a direct sequel to the original movie.
Oh.
That in that one, he doesn't actually get to go up into heaven, because I don't even remember. But basically, the shit that happened in the first movie tipped the scales too far the other way, and now he has to stick around and do good deeds until it's all even out. And of course, couldn't get Brandon Lee for it, because he wouldn't have done that anyway, but also dead. So the person who played it in the TV show was Mark Dacascos. And yeah, it had one season, and it wasn't very good. Wow, I don't know. Made my sphincter tighten up though. That was the producer. I don't know if y'all heard that in the background. I believe that was the producer getting angry at a cat over something.
Oh,
I don't know. I heard Ezzy's little meep right afterwards, so I'm gonna guess Ezzy was scratching something she shouldn't have, or dug her claws into the producer, or something like that. But for all you goth fans out there, I have good news. All four of the movies and the TV show are available to watch instantly on Netflix, so freaking go nuts. But don't really do it. The TV show is fine. The TV show very much was reminiscent to me of Highlander, the series.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it had that very, you know, hour-long action, you know, shallow BS kind of stuff.
Not quite as good as the film.
Oh, not closely as good as the film, yeah. And I don't know what the producer thought, because I never know what the producer thinks of films, so she'll have to tell you. So that was the boring part of the interesting media. And I don't know if y'all are hearing it in the background, but the producer's listening to stuff on her computer, so if you're hearing some weird stuff in the background, that's her. So don't think that there's weird stuff with my computer.
Or with yours, listener.
Or with yours, yes. What was it? Oh, yeah, that was not the most interesting media I consumed. The most interesting media I consumed is I have finally completed all extant Dresden novels.
Wow.
I can no longer be spoiled. Re the Dresden Files.
And like you finish one, you go right to the next one, and now you have to wait.
Oh, thank goodness.
What are you going
to
do?
I like them. I like them a lot. But I'm just so happy to read something else for a while. And I'm so happy that I can talk with people who read them and not have them worry about spoilers. Yeah, I'm comfortable with it. I certainly will read the next one when it comes up, but I'm comfortable now. Now I'm going to read the Foundation Trilogy.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And catch up on some podcasts.
Yeah.
Because I haven't done that in a while. You know what podcast I started catching up on today?
The one that starts with N?
Yes. The N-word podcast. No, wait. That is not right. The Nerdist podcast I started catching up on today because there is so much exciting news!
The act surprised.
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
The Nerdist podcast is coming to Iowa City to perform, and you can get tickets and go and like see them and stuff in person!
And you're going to do this?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Tickets go on sale tomorrow. Well, tickets go on sale to the general public tomorrow, which is November 18th. I will put a link in the show to all this stuff. They're coming to the Engler Theater, which is downtown in Iowa City. So those of you in the area, which I know there are a handful, you should totally go to this thing. The show is not until like April. I want to say April 14th or something. Something in mid-April.
We will have been broadcasting for a year by
now. I know.
Over a year.
And the Nerdist largely was the inspiration for this, so I really got to give them credit for that.
Yeah.
But I totally want to go see that. And I'm so excited about that. So I thought, see, big news, people. There we go.
Maybe they'll ask us to do it sometime.
We'll go on a tour.
Yeah, we'll...
There'll be a magical talking hat tour.
Sure.
I am all over that. I love to travel.
Yeah. Boy, that would actually be very weird.
The magical talking tour.
I mean, to be sitting on a
stage. The magical touring podcast. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
The magical touring hat.
To be sitting on a stage with, like, a full house of people while we're doing our thing and having them respond live. And that would be so weird.
You'd never get a word in.
Probably not.
I mean, less than now.
Well, they'd probably respond to things that we wouldn't expect they'd respond to.
They already do that on the blog.
Like, yeah, I mean, who knows? I can't even guess. And it would be distracting, wouldn't it? Maybe it wouldn't. I don't know.
So you heard it here first, people. William really, he loves you guys as long as he doesn't have to be near you.
Well,
I don't think we...
What, 30 or so people would be fine, but like, you know. Town after town, full house of people, or even a half full house of people, that would be...
Well, lucky strange. For you, 30 or so people is, I think, more than the listeners we currently have.
Oh, okay.
So. But it wouldn't work as a touring thing anyway, because everybody would want to see the hat.
No, oh, God.
And I don't think that many people could look at the hat at once without...
No.
There being terrible temporal paradox or something.
Wow, what would we do about that?
Shield it. Put it in some sort of box.
You can't see.
But then we'd have people like rushing the
people
stage.
People want to see the hat.
This is what I'm saying.
It's weird, but they
but
do.
But they shouldn't.
No, you're right. It, I don't. I think we're probably like, yeah, affected by seeing it.
It can't be unseen. And really, it's like it burns an image into your mind. I have nightmares now about that hat.
Because we'll probably be doing this even when people stop listening because we can't not do it. It's that kind of thing.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure that's only like 3 weeks away.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we'll be keeping it up then.
It's kind of depressing.
We won't have a computer or a microphone. We'll just sit here and talk. And questions keep coming. Where do they come from?
So that was the big...
That was the big news. The Nerdist is coming to Iowa City. If you are in the area, you need to come to Iowa City and to the Nerdist live. It will be awesome. Chris and Matt and Jonah, everybody be there. Awesome. So do it.
Excuse me.
Okay, that's most of the news I got. Is that Ezzy?
I think your exiled cat is looking for some kind of...
Ezzy, did Mom yell at you? Did you deserve it? I suspect you did. She's getting all sheepish about it now. All right. So, we're about 20 minutes in.
Wow, really?
Well, not quite. We're about 19 and a half minutes in.
Well, we better bring out the hat.
Do the thing. All right.
Do the thing. You always call it that. Like, it's not what we always do.
Do what we do.
With the hat.
This is how we do it. All right. Hold on. Before we start. Kraft Dinner. It's like it's our sponsor.
Yeah. Without the money.
Exactly.
Hmm.
Who wrote this question?
I don't know. Anonymous submitter.
Oh, Anonymous has been very busy lately.
Dear Magical Talking Hat. That's so nice when they...
That is good.
Is privacy a basic human right? Is this a new one, do you think?
It does.
Because we were just talking about this.
Yeah, but before we were specifically talking about Google.
Huh.
But this does touch on how it went before. So I'm going to say you think no. Oh, he's going to start drifting back into the olden times, people.
Why don't you say what you think?
No, I want you to say what I think. See, I said what you think. You now tell them what I think.
Is privacy a basic human right? I what I'm having a difficult time with is the word itself and what we're saying it means.
Well, privacy is not a single structure. You can have privacy of a great deal of things.
Mm-hmm.
Privacy of person, privacy of property, privacy of thoughts.
Well, of course, privacy of thoughts, whether or not you think that's a basic human right, is just a reality. I mean,
at this point,
yeah,
something could happen, and then there'd be a question.
But just imagining...
private property. Clearly, the framers of the Constitution thought private property was important.
Yeah. Privacy. I mean, if you think of a hypothetical situation where, you know, there are two people, say, and one of them wants to be alone.
Yes.
Do they have the right...
Want to be alone.
Tell the other person, please leave. I'm invoking my right to privacy. I want to be alone. I mean, I guess.
You're a very private person, so I would think you'd be all over this.
Well, that... Okay, now that's a whole different thing. If you're asking me how I feel about privacy personally. I mean, whether...
Oh, so you get special rights.
No, no, no. Privacy, that's the exact opposite. Is, you know, whether or not privacy is a basic human right has nothing to do with my personal feelings about it.
You love it. It doesn't mean you necessarily think it's the...
But when you say I'm a private person, you mean something very specific. You mean there are certain things about my life that happen that I am not... I don't really want to talk about.
I think there are large swaths of your life. I think easily half the things that happen in your life, at least. And you're very private in other ways. You're very modest. You're very...
Right, but I don't know if I feel like I have a right to these things.
You just like it.
Yeah, I guess.
Okay.
Well, and another thing is, what if... Okay, again, in a hypothetical situation, the person does leave and gives the person their privacy, their alone time, whatever. They come back too soon, and they interrupt what this person has defined as their private moment. Have they violated their rights by doing that?
I will tell you what my opinion is on this. And it's a similar opinion to how I am with issues like abortion and certain civil rights issues and things like that. What I believe is that I am so glad I am not the person who has to determine this legally. Because I believe that this is a complicated issue.
Well, okay. And putting it that way, I will say that I believe that the government doesn't have a right to determine what privacy is or isn't. In other words, if I think there's something the government shouldn't know, then that's it. The government shouldn't know it. Period. End of story.
Okay. But if, for the moment, we pause it, not pause it, but pause it, that privacy is a basic human right. If we say this for a second, is it not feasible that it might be the responsibility of the government to ensure that that right is granted to its citizens?
Well, I don't know. I mean, this came up recently in the conversation I was having with someone else. And we have to remember that the rights that we have, or that we think that we have here in the United States anyway, are our rights. They're not granted to us by the government or the Constitution or anything else. We have these rights.
Inalienably.
Yeah, and the Constitution is basically about instructing the government in what they should do to not impinge upon them.
Okay.
Now...
But your concern for the government impinging upon privacy implies that you believe there is a right to privacy.
Well, as you said, if we're going to assume that there is such a right, as far as the government having any involvement, okay, so the question then becomes, what happens when I think someone else is impinging on any particular right, privacy or whatever it is? Isn't it the government's job or an agent of the government to come in and, you know, stop the person who's impinging on my rights, do something, you know, fine them or incarcerate them or whatever it is they have to do?
Well, and in a basic sense, this happens. If somebody's peeping in your windows, they can totally get arrested for it.
Well, providing there's an ordinance about it in the place that you're living.
I thought that was just like a thing.
No.
Oh, okay.
Well,
cool. I mean, is it a thing around here? I'm just curious.
I don't believe there is any, you know, constitutional guarantee against being peeped in on. I think that's something that...
Sweet!
Well, I'm sure there are local ordinances that prohibit.
But here?
I'm quite sure. Most places have them.
That's okay. It's not that I'm not disturbed enough to be a peeping Tom. I'm too lazy to be a peeping Tom. You have to leave your house.
It's privacy a basic human right?
Yeah, we already read the question. You're just stalling for time now. He doesn't know, people. Stop pestering him.
Well, what? Don't you have any thoughts on this?
I think it's too tricky. I mean, for certain definitions of privacy and for certain definitions of basic human right, yes.
Well, for example, if someone were, if they were to develop a technology like you were saying, they could sort of see into your thoughts. I would say that is a violation of some kind of basic human right.
I would tend to agree.
Whether
with
it's
that.
Privacy, I don't know if that's what I call it, but I think that's crossing. That's definitely crossing a line.
See, and it's tricky. Do I believe that there is certain shit that nobody should have a right to know about me or about something that I do, as long as it is to myself and not affecting anyone else? Do I think there are certain things that I have a right to keep private? Yes. That being said, do I think at any given moment I have the right to privacy or to be private about anything I want in any capacity? No.
Well, but... So the things...
It's a huge continuum.
The things that you feel like you should be able to keep to yourself.
Yes.
If someone took any reasonable steps, you know, they didn't break any laws like bugging your house or whatever, but they took some reasonable step to find it out, and they found it out in a way that didn't violate the law... Would you feel like your rights were violated?
No.
Or just
that your
personal space was violated?
No, because those things that I think are private to me and that I want to be kept private, it is within reason, it is my job to not put it on my live journal.
Okay.
For example. You know, if they can reasonably find out about it without stalking me or breaking into my home or something like that, you know what? Then I wasn't as private about it. I mean, you have to be private about something for it to be kept private.
Yeah, I suppose that's right.
Unless nobody cares, in which case it's all private.
So. And breaking into someone's house isn't so much a privacy violation as it is a property violation. Private property.
A private property violation.
I get that, but... Yes,
Well, and there's a continuum there, yeah, because I don't think people just have the right to come in my home.
Yeah.
A basic human right to your own space, which I guess you could call your private space, I think is reasonable. But it's just a huge continuum. And more than we can discuss before I get bored. And I know this empirically. Guess how?
Because you're already bored.
Yeah.
But I'm really curious to know what our listeners think of this issue, because
there was some pretty big discussion when the Google monster came up.
Oh, really?
Last time. Did you not read? Yeah.
Well, I did, but I didn't.
Stu posted what I would call a mark-worthy post. I'm pretty sure I had to moderate it for it to get posted, which means it's big.
Oh.
Out there all about this crap.
Maybe I missed it.
He started taking notes while he's listening. So, like, I presume Mark does, but I don't know.
Well, that's fun.
Yeah, it means they're really paying attention.
But yeah, any thoughts that any listeners have, I'd be interested to know, because yes. For me, this is not a simple issue.
Thoughts on this should be directed to the blog at themagicaltalkinghat.com. Go there, post, flame, joke, whatever you would like, and share the love, people, because it's all about the love. Speaking of which...
Which?
I forgot one thing. One awesome thing that happened this week.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
Marcel, the shell,
oh, God.
With shoes on, 2. Did you watch it?
I thought 2 was actually better than 1.
See, the producer did not like 2 as well. I liked 2 perfectly fine. I find them different a bit, but I still really loved it.
My favorite.
Do you know why the buses have stopped running? Because the bus is a caterpillar and it threw up.
My favorite one, though, was when he asked what happened to his sister.
Yes.
Oh, well, somebody asked her to hold a balloon. Yeah.
You want to see me turn this page?
I mean, that's...
Read on!
That is so funny because, you know, could have said, well... A balloon picture or something,
yes,
but just to
asked her.
Just to say somebody asked her to
course,
hold a balloon.
Is he? Oh God! I can smell his face.
Yeah, I thought it was better than the first one.
The first one
was okay, but I thought the second one was really
great. A great deal. I will put the link in the show notes for that, and I will put the first one. I'm pretty sure we've covered Marcel the Shell with Shoes On in this podcast before, but in case we haven't, or in case you didn't listen, I will put a link to the first one as well in the show notes.
But just like the trailer you wish you didn't see, we've pretty much given all the best parts away.
No, I left some out. Windy.
It was pretty good.
But yeah, okay. New question.
New question.
Oh, it's from Veramond, because that went so well last week. This one appears to have been digested a bit.
Oh.
Possibly by a gastroenteropublicist. I think a gastroenteropublicist is just somebody who tells you what they had to eat.
Oh, okay.
Or possibly what it looked like.
Before they ate it, hopefully.
Yes. Dear TMTH, what are the host's thoughts on the overly persistent nature of the Iowa City Cedar Rapids goth scene?
The overly what?
Persistent nature.
Persistent in what way?
I don't know. I think he's lying. He doesn't live here. He has no idea what he's talking about. Screw him.
Persistent in the sense that they won't go away? Or persistent in
the... Iowa City Cedar Rapids is, you might say, infested with goths. You cannot swing a dead cat without hitting a puffy shirt and some guyliner. No, I have no idea what he's talking about. I don't see any, other than when I LARPed, which my LARP is dead now and I am sad. I don't see goths around here. Do you see goths? Not in my living room.
Once in a while, but not so many that I mean, if someone were to come up and ask me, do you have a lot of goths in the Iowa City Cedar Rapids area? I would have said probably not any more than anywhere else.
What are
probably,
you stupid?
Probably less than most other places because it is Iowa.
It's Iowa.
And what we mean by it's Iowa is...
That goths don't come to Iowa.
Well, it's just, we do have people they who would
exist.
Consider themselves
some.
Goths or even emo and all that other stuff. But
it always cracks me up when people consider themselves emo. Because that seems like a label you put on other people to be mean.
Yeah.
And so why would you, you know...
I don't know.
It's like, yeah, I'm really kind of a dick, you know? I get well, into that. Like, no! Like, why would you say that?
My observation is that... Okay. Even in the goth scene, and probably for so-called emo people, too, there's probably a gap between the people who do it as a sense of style and the kind of music they listen to and whatnot, and the people who do it because, you know, they claim they have sort of a fascination with
death
and dark themes and things like that. And this being Iowa, the fashion side of it, just not very likely. And I can't explain why that is, and I'm not trying to diss Iowa or anything. I'm just saying it just doesn't seem... I've lived here my whole life, and I've been to a lot of places, and that kind of thing just doesn't seem important here. Now, as far as the interest in death and depression and whatever else, well, there's just not a lot to be depressed about, I guess. I mean, you know, a lot of people around here are fairly happy people, and even the kids. And most of the kids I know who want to be goth or emo or whatever, they have to sort of make things up to be sad about, if you know what I'm saying. So it's a little bit... You just don't see a lot of it, I guess, is what I'm getting at. That's my experience. Not that there isn't... Just like every place else, kids can have a hard time and abusive parents and stuff like that, but for the most part, there's just not a lot to complain about around here, I don't think. But that's my observation. And what's yours? You seem really
no,
amused.
I just love
by
it. I was just like, I should take the shovel away. No, this is funny.
What?
I was like your most Garrison Keillor-esque moment.
Well,
welcome to Iowa, where the women are strong.
No, but
the
we
men
both
are good looking.
We both said this is Iowa, and I realized
and
nobody's going to know what that
children
means.
Are above average.
Some people aren't going to know what that means.
Yeah,
and...
I didn't mean what you meant.
Why? What did you mean?
I meant that we're in the middle of the Midwest and there's
but
less
so,
goths here.
But why would there be?
Because the goth movement tends to be a much more of an urban-based movement.
And why?
That I don't know.
Well, that's kind of what I was getting at. It's not...
Because bad things happen in urban settings?
Well, there's alienation in urban settings. There's, you know, even a relatively decent family in an urban setting, the kids can go to school and be, you know, bullied more and probably more harshly than they are here.
Welcome to Iowa.
I think, I might be
here
wrong.
Here every day, the sun may not be a little bit brighter, but we feel like it is.
I'm not
every
saying
day,
it's...
You could wear makeup. But why bother?
It's
people
more
die
real.
Here.
Just like you put it out.
But we really don't give a damn.
Shut up. It's just like you said. It's more rural here, and like you said, it's more urban phenomena. The other stuff probably because in urban areas there's more tension. There's more, you know, all the things that are going to make a person anxious and, you know,
what's
feel
to
emotional.
Be depressed about when you've got corn. Oh, now I've made him all emo.
I can't help it. I can't help it. If
William, what are you doing? Why are you putting that mascara
shut
on?
Shut up. I can't help it if you know, a state that mostly has a rural ethos is going to be a more laid-back and maybe overall happier place than a place that's got an urban ethos and a lot of urban things going on.
Oh, urban ethos.
Yeah, I mean... Cities are fine, but, you know, they have a lot of problems that end up coming out in things like, as you say, the goth movement that you just might not find here. Most kids who are going to do that kind of stuff here, they're just copying what kids are doing somewhere else. They don't even have a lot of reason to be depressed or dark or whatever they are. Maybe they just want to be different. Maybe they're bored. You know, this Iowa can be boring to some people.
Did you ever see that South Park episode where they unfroze the guy who had been... stuck in ice for like 3 years,
and then they send him to Des Moines
because everything's 3 years
behind.
There.
Or, yeah, whatever. Yes, that is kind of what I was like. But I like it here.
Yes.
You're not from here, like, and you Canada. Like it here, okay.
I was forced to stay here, and now I like it, but I think it may be Stockholm Syndrome. I'm not entirely sure.
Well, this podcast is probably evidence of that. Because you put up with me. I'm about as Iowa as you can get. I think. Maybe. Maybe not. I don't know.
You're pretty rural.
Yep.
Pretty much all your goth stylings appear to be copied from other kids in big cities. We have a Hot Topic in our mall, or at least we used to. Do we still?
Yeah, Hot Topics, though, kind of moved more toward just like band t-shirts and stuff like that. It's sort of away from trying to appeal to the gothic scene. Although,
aren't there still sharp pieces of metal I could stick in my nose?
Maybe. Although the people who were into goth as a fashion, you know, people who followed gothic bands and it was about the clothes, it wasn't about death or being depressed or whatever. They
created
like,
Bratz dolls.
They didn't like Hot Topic because they thought that was for, you know, posers.
Yes, hipsters
or something.
Goth hipsters, gothsters. Gothsters who are fascinated by death and decay, but only ironically.
Yeah, exactly.
Who wear big creepy glasses. Okay, I'm tired of making fun of William in this particular context, so let's draw something else out so I can make fun of him in a different one.
We didn't really answer his question, though.
Yeah, we think you're full of shit, Vermond. We do not think there is a persistent scene, and if there is, it's just you and your freaking goth buddies, so knock it off.
Useless trivia man.
Useless trivia man! I think he still listens, I don't know for sure.
What's the best damn movie your servants, Tony and William, we are the hat servants, have seen, but it's so obscure that probably no one else has seen it? Well, you know.
You've got one, I'm sure.
Well, the best movie I've ever seen, everyone has seen, so I have to think of a movie that
Good movie that is very obscure.
You know, on my list of obscure movies that I think is the best is what it comes down to. You think I have one? I do watch a lot of independent film, but I don't know if I do have one.
You just always know shit that nobody else knows.
That's not true.
And meanwhile, you don't know shit that everyone knows.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I don't know anything that... you're saying
the stuff you know, nobody else knows.
Oh, okay.
The stuff everybody else knows, you don't,
I don't
know.
That's
yeah.
right. You're right,
so
you're right.
I'm assuming most films you've seen were imaginary.
I don't know. When I watch films, they're usually popular films that have been in the theater or whatever. I don't... I do watch independent films sometimes.
You watch Moon, that thing with Sam Rockwell?
No.
That was kind of cool. I mean, I think it was kind of... Well, I mean, it was an indie film, but I think it was kind of...
It's so obscure that probably nobody else has seen it.
Oh.
Can you think of one?
There was a made-for-TV movie about the Ewoks.
Okay,
the
but that's,
Ewok Adventure, I think
But that's
it was
not
called.
The best... Of the ones on the list. Come on.
That's true.
I don't know.
I feel bad. I know a good one.
I should have a good one here. Go.
But you have to understand, it's not so much good as awesome, which does not necessarily mean good, so
okay.
Keep that in mind.
Okay.
It's a movie called Drive. And no, it's not that movie called Drive.
The one you already talked about?
Yes, it's not that one. It's also not the other movie called Drive.
Okay.
It is yet a different movie called Drive. And what it is a chase action buddy comedy kind of movie with the buddies being Mark Dacascos and Kadeem Dwayne Wayne Hardison.
Haven't you mentioned one of those guys already?
Yeah, Mark Dacascos. He also played... the main guy in the TV show of The Crow.
Oh.
And he currently is playing the American chairman on the American version of Iron Chef. But yeah, so the two of them, martial arts expert and B-movie actor Mark Dacascos and Dwayne Wayne from the real from different world, Kadeem Hardison, in a, you know, thrown together and outrunning the bad guys chase buddy comedy with lots of martial arts, because that's what Mark Dacascos does. It's pretty awesomely terrible, But it's fun. You should watch it. It's good. We've already mentioned Gunmen before, which is horrible in the same vein and awesome in the same vein.
Well, you know, as soon as we're done, I'm going to think of all of these independent, little obscure independent films that I've seen that I thought were very good, and I forgot their names, and I forgot... I'm remembering parts of one that I don't think most people have seen, but I can't remember the title to save my life. So...
I would highly recommend a film called Antonia's Line. But you probably see it. Oh, I know one that's kind of obscure that I really liked years ago. It's a really good romance story with some really good acting in it. If you pay attention, it has some major plot holes and historical inaccuracy, unfortunately. But I love it. It's called Come See the Paradise. And it's a film with Dennis Quaid and Tamlyn Tomita in it. And it is the story, it is set in the late 30s, early 40s primarily, at least to start with. And it is the story of a man who is a union sweatshop lawyer in Chicago and eventually has to run away because of legal troubles and comes to California where he meets a young second generation Japanese woman in Little Tokyo, and the two of them fall in love and hijinks ensue. But in particular, World War II breaks out, and so she and her family are sent to the Japanese internment camps and he is drafted. And it goes from there, and it's a very wonderful romance, and it has some great music and some wonderful acting in it, and I would recommend it for anybody who's into romantic films, I think.
What about, another thing is I'm not sure which films are obscure, you know?
That's the thing. Most people I know don't know that one. Like, I know another good one.
Okay.
Oh, I know a really, really, really good one. It's called The Sum of Us, S-U-M of Us. And it's an Australian film starring a very young, at least to me, relatively unknown at the time, actor by the name of Russell Crowe. It's based on a play, and it's a story about a young, early 20s, gay plumber and his older, I think, boat, I don't know, he does something on a boat, father, who live together, and his father's straight. And it's fascinating to me because it's all about the whole dealing with the gay straight thing. But unlike so many of these stories, it is not about the straight father and the gay son dealing with their issues. It's actually about the straight father and the gay son having dealt with their issues and being fine, and the world and other people sort of having to deal with that concept. That, like, he lives with his straight father and his straight father's fine with it and it's all great, and people just aren't used to that, and so the people in their lives, it's sort of awkward. But it's a wonderful, wonderful and fairly funny, but also, I mean, I cried during it and stuff too, but I like it. I like it a lot. I would recommend it highly. It's probably in my top five favorite films ever. It does suffer, for those of you who dislike it, from the whole play turned into a movie thing. I know some people think that's sort of a waste of film craft, especially if you just do it as the play. This has plenty of soliloquy at the camera and that kind of stuff. But I loved it, and I would highly recommend it. The Sum of Us, S-U-M.
Well, another film that a lot of people haven't seen, but it's not terribly obscure, or maybe it is now. Maybe a lot of people would think of it's obscure now, that you and I both enjoy, is My Dinner with Andre.
My Dinner with Andre is a very obscure film at this point, and it is a wonderful film. If you can sit through it.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the magic trick. It's not for everybody. And the trick appears to be, if you can actually sit through it and keep paying attention, not leave the room, not fall asleep, not do something else, you tend to like it.
Now, but how obscure could it really be when they've riffed on it in Community? I mean, like a whole episode of
Community. Did they riff on it in Community? I need to see that episode.
Like a whole episode.
I need to see that episode.
Although, I was watching it with a group of people, and I might have been the only person that noticed until, like, near the end when they actually said what they were riffing on.
I find it, the place I always know the reference from, and in fact, probably the first place I ever heard of it, was in an episode of Family Ties. when the youngest daughter got a little bit older, she got kind of philosophical and existential. Mm-hmm. And there's one bit where she's watching it. Do you want to explain what this movie is, or shall I?
Yeah, I can.
Because I think people should know what it is going into it, because that will give you a big sense of whether or not you should see it.
I first heard of it. I used to watch Siskel and Ebert when I was young because I thought they had great opinions about movies and they were fun to watch. And I think Roger Ebert would talk about how great it is. It's a great film. And well, I don't know. The people in it, Andre, what's his last name?
Gregory.
And Wallace Shawn?
Wallace Shawn.
Basically, it is the two of them, you know, having dinner, I guess. But they're having some fairly deep philosophical discussions. And it doesn't seem like it's spontaneous. You know, it seems like it's probably scripted. But it's pretty... You feel like you're sitting in on their conversation, a real conversation the two of them are having.
They wrote the script together.
Yeah.
And supposedly it is a composite of actual conversations
that they've had. And they play themselves.
Yes, they play themselves.
And everything happens at the dinner table, basically. So.
Yes, and that's the thing. It's 2 hours of dinner conversation.
Right, right.
There's maybe 3 minutes beforehand sort of setting that up.
Mm-hmm.
And there's like a minute at the end sort of closing it, but otherwise it's a feature length dinner conversation between two guys. So that should be your big indicator right now. If you're like, wow, that sounds really fascinating, then go see it. If you're like, why the fuck would somebody film that, then yeah, probably you should not.
I thought it was quite good. Now, they worked on another project together.
They worked on several, but you're thinking of Vanya on 42nd Street.
Maybe. Am I?
Where they did Uncle Vanya just sort of spontaneously.
Well, what I'm thinking of, that they were, the setup was that they were going to stage a play and they did little vignettes from it, or maybe they did the whole thing, I don't know, but it seems like they'd stop in the middle and talk about certain things and then they'd go on with
I've never seen Vanya on 42nd Street. I've always wanted to. I'm guessing that's what it is. That is the other film for which the two of them are well known. I mean, they collaborated on all sorts of stuff, but primarily they were both theater people.
That they were both in?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because they were both in this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because Andre's the director and Wallace Shawn is one of the actors.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's Vanya on 42nd Street.
Okay.
Which I have not seen. And a lot of other pretty big people are actually in it, too.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, they worked a lot together, but primarily they were originally both theater people. Wallace Shawn has attained some sort of dubious fame over the years, I think, because he gets these stupid little plots because he's this short little bald guy. People best know him from what was admittedly an awesome role, which was the role of Vizzini in The Princess Bride.
Yeah.
But he shows up in lots of stuff, and I always feel sort of bad for him. He had a reoccurring guest spot on Clueless, the series, and stuff
like that.
I think he might have been in the movie playing the same role. Yeah, he was one of the teachers.
Well, one of the first things I ever saw him in television was he was in The Cosby Show as like a neighbor.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. He was Mr. Jeffries or whatever.
I don't remember.
Yeah.
I don't remember.
Back when they still had white people on The Cosby Show.
I guess.
They did. Late season, you never saw a white person, but in the earlier days you saw him. Yeah, but he was on there. Huh. But first and foremost, he was a playwright, and then he became sort of an actor. But yeah, he and Andre Gregory did a lot in the theater. My Dinner with Andre was done in 1984 by some major countercultural people, so it does feel dated in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
And you sort of have to, I mean, which makes it a fascinating cultural artifact. But you also sort of have to translate it then. It has some really good stuff to say, but you sort of have to translate it a couple decades.
Well, the thing is, you know, before this film was ever made, I'm sure if someone ever thought, you know what, it would be interesting to make a film just based on these conversations we're having, the first thought anyone's going to have is, what? Why would that be interesting at all? And what fascinated me was that, I don't know. I was enthralled the whole time, really. It didn't seem like 2 hours of just sitting through someone else's dinner conversation.
Absolutely.
It was interesting.
When I made my friends in college watch it, I had watched it on my own, or with my parents, maybe. I don't know. I was familiar with the film, and then I made my friends watch it. And everybody was excited because they were like, oh, I haven't seen this. And there were like 12 of us. And by the time it was over, there were 3 of us left. And the 3 of us went out, I think, to get something to eat and just talked about it for hours afterwards. Yeah. And we were really fascinated. Everybody else had fallen asleep or left or something.
Hmm.
And I've seen that in other things too. I did viewings of it in college at other times, and people would show up and some people would leave, and the people who didn't always were like, wow. But it is, I think it touches on a lot of issues that aren't as groundbreaking now. It touches on existential and philosophical concepts that since then there have been entire, you know, academic genres based on. So you do have to translate it some.
I suppose, but I mean...
But some of the fundamental concepts are still very powerful.
When I finally saw it, I don't think there... I thought there was anything earth-shattering about what was said. It was just...
I don't know. It was very moving to me. I might have been at the right age, but it had a major impact on me.
It was more about the conversation and just how it unfolded... You know, it just seemed very, I guess there's two ways you can really get a lot out of the film. Either it gives you a lot of insight that you hadn't previously reflected upon, or it can help maybe put into words things that you already felt but hadn't been able to put into words. Or I suppose a third way would be a lot of things are said that, yeah, you know, that I'm glad to hear someone else say that. It's not just rattling around in my head. And, you know, there's probably a little bit of all of that while you're watching because it's insightful. It is, and it's interesting to hear how they put things that maybe you didn't think of. And if they say anything that you've already been thinking of but you didn't know anyone else was thinking it, that can be very satisfying. So,
also, this is very important. My Dinner with Andre should not be confused with the film Eating Raoul. That has been done in the past. My Dinner with Andre, deep philosophical film about two guys having some serious philosophical conversations at dinner. Eating Raoul, also filmed in the early 80s, I believe. Softcore, lowbrow comedy about some people who kill people for money and eventually eat somebody. And has a lot of boobs in it. So it's not necessarily... I'm not saying it's a bad film. I'm saying it's a different film. It's a very, very different film.
Right.
And you should... It's more of one of those films you would have seen back on in the day when USA showed those up all night films. You would have seen a censored version of this particular film back then. So yeah, if you go into one and expecting the other, it's gonna hurt.
Yeah, it's gonna be
either
really
way,
bad.
Yeah, so you should prep for that.
Well, we did talk about a lot of movies. I'm not sure how obscure any of them were,
but we need more foreign films involved.
Well, and that's another thing. I do watch some of those, and I know that I could think of some, but I don't know. You know me, I don't have a very good memory, especially when I'm under the gun.
And I do point a gun at him the whole hour, every time.
Oh, I guess we've never revealed that before.
No.
Was I not supposed to?
Yeah, I have to kill you now.
Crap.
After we tape the next episode.
Okay. Well, it's been fun.
Yeah. We should probably stop here because we're almost at the time and we have to do a second episode anyway.
That's right.
So yeah, this has been the Magical Talking Hat. If you want to ride into the hat and possibly get your stuff set on the air, write the Magical Talking Hat, email the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also go to the blog and talk on the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com. Also go to Facebook and like us. We need that 36th like so we can win a free sandwich. Also, tell other people. Make them listen. Sit them down. Tie them to a chair.
And the review.
Drug them.
The review.
And we got another review.
We did.
We have a third 5-star review from... I say 5-star. You don't have to be 5-star. All three right now happen to be 5-star, and we appreciate 5-star. But it doesn't. I'm not trying to... You know, I want reviews. Blood Sparrow left us a review.
Oh.
Two words. Oddly compelling. I like it.
Well, thank you, Useless Trivia Man, Veramond, and Anonymous.
And
I guess we'll see y'all at Thanksgiving.
Yes, next week.
Next week.
Which is now.
Now,
for
us. Do I
have to cook a turkey?
No.
Please disregard the previous hour of Useless Audio.
This has been a production of the Magical Talking Ant Podcast. If you would like to contact us, and I don't know why you would, please do so at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. All music is provided courtesy of Jay Underberg. More of his PodSafe audio can be found at podsafeaudio.com/J_Underberg. Thank you.